The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. Okay, now with Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State off this past weekend, this kind of felt like it was going to be a generally quiet Saturday, but slow down. LSU, how about them showing some heart? And Florida falling apart in the fog. USC joining the party a little late. Auburn finally ending the Gus Malzahn era after years of speculation. And the Heisman race now taking an interesting turn heading into the conference championship games. Plenty more in front of us. Before we start digging in, you guys have tried a bunch of different things this year on game day. And that's a credit to the crew, the producer, Jim Guerrero, coordinating producer, Drew Gallagher, director, Rodney Perez, everyone on the crew for thinking outside the box. But Herbie, we've got to start. I want to know the experience of riding in a chopper during a pick segment, traveling above the Hudson River. What was that like?
Well, let me start by just saying, and I know David feels the same way. I think anybody who's with our show feels the same way. In a year of the country being divided, and a year where there's been unrest, global pandemic, it's just been so many different challenges for everybody, you know, whether it's your personal life with your family, whether it's been your job, whatever you're dealing with, everybody's been going through something. And adversity, I look at adversity like, not that I welcome adversity, but I welcome the challenge of adversity and trying to maintain a positive outlook. And that's where where I've tried to stay the best I can throughout a lot of this. But I was very, really fortunate on Friday to get in early and get a Coach Monk and kind of set up a tour for me to get around the football facilities, which are incredible at West Point, and then also take a tour around campus. And I don't know, man, you get around the academies anytime, it's always just kind of like, wow. Like, I'm in awe of what they do. Not just for us and the sacrifice they make, but I'm just talking about their daily life and what they do. I'm just so appreciative, like we all are. But I just think with this year, it just made you take even another step back, and you have such appreciation and such hope for what's still out there in this country. If you turn on the news, it's the opposite. So everything that's bad about this country, and you go to West Point and you're reminded all that's good about this country and all the potential of what we have to offer. So I know on behalf of game day, I know we all felt that. And that was the most important thing about the trip to me. This pick segment was a lot of fun. I had no idea. I didn't even know if I was ever on camera. That was the weird thing for me. Like I wasn't, people thought I was nervous. Only thing I was nervous of was the guy sitting next to Jonathan Wiley, who was holding the camera. He had this like black shield on. He looked like Darth Vader. Like, that guy was kind of making me and he was a monster. I mean, he had to be 240, just ripped up. And he was talking to me. I had headphones on from the pilot and from these guys, and they were like doing all the pilot lingo. And then I had IFB in, so I could hear David and Reese and Dez and Coach and Condi talking about whatever pick. So I had a combination of a lot of different things going on in my ears. But to be able to go into an Army helicopter, and I still haven't seen it, what it looked like, but somebody said the quality of the video and the audio was actually pretty good. So that's encouraging. But yeah, I'm flying over the top of the Hudson River and making picks, listening to the David and trying to know when to jump in over the pilot talking to, I don't know who he's talking to, ground control or somebody, and and trying to navigate that. And then we landed, and it was definitely a different, very memorable and different experience.
Herbie, it was a clean. I was blown away. And when you're in TV, you're always wondering about a delay. I was blown away. There were no hits on the video, and it was clean. In a world where you are saying something and you're waiting for somebody to hear you, like, it blew me away how clean it was. Well done by everyone.
Wiley does an amazing job for us on our show, and he works with me on the Saturday night game, and he gets anytime you see access behind the scenes, it's him and his relationships and what he gets. And he was the only one that was allowed to come with me. Bear and Maria and Kenley and Darren, all the people that go, you know, from game day to the game that we call, they had to go early because there just wasn't room in the helicopter. So Wiley was the only one in. And he said something about, you might understand this, something about he could tell with the digital quality of these new cameras. The camera, by the way, looked like something you would have in your family home. Like it was a tiny little camera. Wow. And he said that the reading was, he can tell if it's good or bad quality. And he said it was the numbers that were coming back to him as he was looking at it were above like high def quality. Mm. And I just don't understand that, like that technology and how that works. It's fascinating.
Well, you know, and maybe the explanation is you were shooting from above everything, right? There was no interference from any, you know, satellite, whatever towers that you're going through. I was stunned by that. And that's such a cool experience. And well yeah. said on West Point, that yeah, experience.
We loved it. And then the game, are you kidding me? The game, first time since 43, it's been on that campus in World War II. And then the game is just a field position, grudge match. Who's going to have to drive the length of the field is going to lose the game. Goal line stands, fog. I mean, it was like a perfect Army-Navy game.
Yeah, it was. And what a stop on that fourth and one, especially after a big run right there. Pollock, what was the experience like for you? Was that your first West Point trip?
Yeah, that was the first one for, I mean, obviously it not being there since, you know, since 43 for game day. You know, my Uncle Gus is in the Army and I visited him several times, but he's never been at West Point when I visited him. But just, I mean, just pride. Like, you know, I was pulling in the gates and first thing I did was text him and just told him how proud I was of him and his 40 years of service. And like the first thing I said when we opened the show the other day was just, in a year where we felt like we were sacrificing so much, like I can't do this, I can't do that. And you're like, wait a minute, look at what these dudes have done. Like this is their year every year, always sacrificing, always taking care of us, always looking out for us. So it was a cool experience. The guys did good. The helicopter scene was sweet. And then college football day was awesome. And the way it ended, you know, even the way it ended with LSU and Florida was crazy. So it was a full day of fun.
All right. That's really cool. And one thing that I think that'll stand out when looking back at 2020, the whole entire experience. It's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protective with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And Herbie, this is the final time we're going to do this because, you know, a week from now, we'll know who's in. Right now, in your mind, who's in?
Well, Kevin, as you know, we've had some fun with this even through a global pandemic. College football has been able to press on for the most part, even though I like to say we're bouncing off of guardrails, but we've gotten to this final week and we've been taking a look all year at the All-State Playoff Predictor. The All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top team's chances of making the college football playoff. And we've been pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. Not a whole lot of changes, obviously at the top with Alabama up there for me, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, Florida. We'll talk about that in a second. You know, the Florida game against LSU, you know, that was probably the shocker of the weekend. So it puts Florida, I think, in a position that even though they're in Atlanta, I don't think they're playing for a right to get into the playoff. That's how significant of a loss they had. So I think they're at 0.2 with the All-State playoff predictor. I don't know how we got that down to 0.2, but they're, I guess they still have oxygen down there. They're just a notch below Coastal Carolina. But I think if there are some upsets, it would be a fun discussion about what potentially happens. So every year it seems to come down to the final weekend. And this year, despite everything we've been through, we're still going to have a weekend with some games that are going to leave some questions potentially and some doubt as we get ready for Sunday and the selection day of the four teams that are in.
And right now we got Alabama at the top at 99.3%. Let's just put them at 100%. Just the whole vibe when you watch this team in the eye test being number one right now. Ohio State, 87%. Notre Dame, just under 70%. How about USC in the All-State playoff predictor, the whatever they do to put this whole thing together, it's much smarter than me, but it's at 49.7%. Clemson at 45%. Texas A&M now at 33.7%. Then you got Cincinnati, Indiana, Northwestern. And, of course, we'll see how this all continues to play out this coming weekend. Let's get to the action, because this was supposed to be, it felt like, hey, everything's lining up and we'll figure things out on the 19th, entering into the 20th. No, December 12th felt like it was, especially during the night windows, a fun ride. Let's start with what happened in Gainesville. I feel, first off, terrible for Marco Wilson. And I think that everybody got it out of their system on Sunday. I live with a gator, and she was livid all Saturday night. Thankfully, I was at work, not at home. And then Sunday morning, just beyond, of course. But it will go down in SEC lore as the shoe game. LSU had 55 scholarship players. The credit, though, should go to the Tigers, because Max Johnson was making his first career start. He did not look like the moment was bigger for him. Kyle Trask was in the driver's seat for the Heisman race. The whole game, I was thinking, man, they sorely miss Kyle Pitts, especially in the first half when they struggled. You got the fog that you're dealing with. You got Cade York hitting the 57-yarder, which is a school record. You got Dan Mullen's comments after the game. Herbie, let's start with you. Your first reaction on how this whole thing played out, and then what's next here for Florida with a two-loss team heading into the SEC championship game against Alabama?
You sure you want to start with me on this topic?
Bring it.
I am not the guy to talk to about this stuff, because I get my fuse lit and I just don't handle this real well. Like, this is
of a deal, Kirk. Come on. It's not that big. I mean, geez, it wasn't that bad. Just a bunch of new school kids doing, you know, just being kids. No big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I am. You know, for 25 years, guy can throw five interceptions. I'll talk about the safety made a good play. Wow, the corner adjusted on the ball. Like, you'll never hear me be critical of players that play college football. Hardly ever. The only time that I get frustrated is when players do that. You know, like they make it about them. They get caught up in an individual battle. Like, we're at the opening and it's a one-on-one. Forget the situational awareness that's 3rd and 10 and you got them off the field and the defense did their job and you're going to get the ball back to Kyle Trask and they're going to go down with the best kicker in the college football and win the game. Like, forget that. It's, oh, no, no. And I love Dan Mullen, but he doubled down with his explanation yesterday. On instead of saying that was a mistake, what was he thinking? We got to be better than that. That's undisciplined. That's not who we are. He supported him. And to me, you not only lost an opportunity with that player, you lost an opportunity with the entire team. And you really just said that you're cool with that culture, which to me is a whole different discussion. But let me just say this, and David, I don't want you can take it. I'm going to go the other way and say, we did a segment on College Game Day on LSU, and forget the Florida game. LSU leading into Florida has been a debacle. Never seen a team win at all to a team that looks like this. And I really felt like watching this team this year, most of the year, the guys that played last year that were, I want to almost use the word forced to play this year, it was like they were held hostage in 2020. Like, they see all their friends, like they're looking across a river across, and they're sailing away, you know, off to the NFL. And there wasn't enough room for them to get on and go to the NFL voyage. So I guess we have to stay here and wait for the next boat to take us over the NFL side of the land. It was like they were forced to play. That's how they looked to me all year. And finally, they left. You know, they left. They said, we're opting out. We're out of here. The big tight end said he's had enough. He's, you know, big monster, maybe one of the best young tight ends in the game. He's had enough. He's got to kind of reevaluate things. And you know what? All they had left were a bunch of guys that most of the guys you hadn't really heard of. And they decided they'd heard enough about how bad they are. And they scrapped, David. They battled. And it looked like a team that was, as I said on Twitter, they looked united for the first time. I watched them all year and played for each other instead of individuals. And it's amazing what you can do when you do that. It's not about the NFL. It's not about your agent. It's not about what round am I going to go. It's about playing football for LSU. And that's what they did. And, you know, they could have easily lost that game. But the important thing is they played their best game as a team.
Yeah. So, all right. So you got the positive. I guess I'll take the other side then. You know, listen, here's what you don't see. And you can call this what you want. You can get as upset as you want, everybody out there. Let me ask you a question, Kirk. Does this happen at Bama? Does this happen at Clemson?
Never.
Does this happen at UGA? Does this happen at Ohio State?
No.
The premier programs and the programs that know how to compete and know that it's not about them, they don't do these things. By the way, LSU, Ricks gets a pick six, dances his way into the end zone, stops and waits for Kyle Trask to get to him. Like, at some point, great teams, great organizations realize all I do when I throw that shoe or celebrate is I make it about me. That's all I do. It's about me, and I've made it about me. The great teams, the great organizations, they make it about we, and they make it about team, and they consistently do it week in and week out. And it was just a reminder that Florida's not there yet. And I was very disappointed in Dan Mullen. I was very disappointed in how he handled the situation. I was also very disappointed in how he managed the game, too. I mean, you got 15 seconds left before half, and you're on your own 30, Kirk, and you're trying to air it out for no reason whatsoever. That didn't make a lot of sense. You fumble, LSU gets a kick, gets a field goal right before then. The end of the game, by the way, you take a timeout before a 57-yard field goal when you still got a minute plus left to get the ball back and make something happen. So I thought they managed it. They looked like a team that hadn't been there before, Kirk. They looked like a team that wasn't ready for that stage yet. Now, listen, they got some breaks that went there against them that were bad. Okay. The unlucky throw that bounces off of Tony's head and off of a face mask and into Ward's hands. Like, that's unfortunate. You get stopped inside the one, unfortunate. You know, you lose the turnover battle 3-0. You don't typically win those games, but just disappointing when you lose it like that, because again, this is the ultimate team sport. You got 11 players doing 11 different things on every snap. And unfortunately, what you had was a guy making a great play. The defense finally stepping up, even though they've been pretty bad all season, making a play. And then you cost yourself a chance to possibly play for a national championship.
And the comments afterwards, a handful of things, you know, Kirby, you made a reference to Sunday's Dan Mullen's comments. But after the game, Mullen was quoted saying, "I know we have played 10 games, so I guess probably the best thing to do is would have been playing less games, because he seemed to get rewarded this year for not playing this that in college football, enough games." And many thought that is that a shot at Ohio State, like we heard earlier in the week. This playing enough games theme has been a storyline. It's not just from Dan Mullen. We heard Dabo make a reference to that as well. This comes back to a theme, and you guys are probably going to have to talk about it on Tuesday night as well, with Ohio State playing enough games. I will transition here to another storyline that we saw Saturday night, and that is USC. Clay Helton's team, if you're on the West Coast, you know what they've done. That is their third win this season in the final minute of the game. And they played a very good UCLA team. When I say good, considering what we've seen the last few years, it feels like they're getting the identity of what Chip wants to do and playing physical football. And if you're going to judge Ohio State at five games, it feels like USC ranked 15th in the latest rankings before tomorrow night. At 5-0 should be a little bit higher, but are we going back to the eye test and the judgment of how we're going into this season? Like, how do you guys view this? They haven't played enough games yet. Some people say, well, they do have to play a certain amount of games. Some people say they don't have to, but then you bring up USC into the conversation, playing the same amount as Ohio State. It's a lot that I'm throwing out there, but Herbie, where do you want to go in this topic? Because it will be talked about on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, my first thing is about the amount of games. I understand that frustration, but I know at the same time that there's been a frustration from a lot of other conferences for years that the SEC and how many conference games that they played. And the Big Ten, you know, they could sit there and say, E. Willikers, why did we have to play Iowa that year? We had to play 10 conference games. That's not fair. The SEC is only playing 8. Why are we playing 10? So these other conferences have been playing 10 conference games. And so they can relate to what the SEC has been saying about all these games that they've had to play, because the wear and tear and the potential of an LSU Florida games out there. These other conferences have been doing that for a long time, and you really haven't heard a whole lot about that. You know, why the FCS, you know, the SEC's played the FCS before their big rivalry game at the end of the year. It just kind of is the way it is. Not really, there's people that aren't jumping up and down about how ridiculous that is. It's just the way it is. And so to me, Ryan Day, I don't think, was on a conference call saying, hey, is there any way we just want to play 5 this year? You know, we want to stay clean. We don't want to play 10. Ryan Day would play 30 if he could play 30. Like, he's not hiding from competition. So the reality is 2020 is an unusual year. Ohio State, unlike USC, before the season started, was in the same pool with Clemson and Alabama and probably Georgia before the season started. Not saying that's fair or unfair. I'm just saying, with Justin Fields and the team they had returning, that's where they were. So if you go back and when they played their first game, pretty sure the AP put them at 3 and when they were 1-0. So this is not the committee. This is the consensus of who particularly, specifically Ohio State is. I don't think that's the same about USC. So there's a perception of who Ohio State, just like if Alabama played 5 this year and played a 6th game in the SEC championship, you think Alabama would be left out of the discussion about the best 4 teams?
Nope.
Hell no. Of course not. Would Clemson, if they played 5 games and then they missed Duke, doggone it, they missed that Duke game, they missed Georgia Tech and whoever else, you think we'd be sitting there saying, oh, now Trevor Lawrence and Clemson, they didn't play enough games. They're not one of the best 4. Of course not. So I understand it. I get it. But I think you have to realize that at the end of the day, the goal was to put the best 4 teams on the field. 2020, if you want to blame anybody, you can talk about the Big Ten presidents and how they were fearful and they were backing off. They didn't want to have a season and all that. Nobody was more upset about that than Ryan Day and his players. So I think USC's had a great run. I brought him up, even though Reese kind of smacked me across the face, you know, as the Pac-12 doesn't even deserve to be in the discussion. I like to talk about the Pac-12. I know that David and I kind of have fun with that. I like the Pac-12. I've always liked it. I don't think they're worthy of being in the top 4 right now, but I think they're worthy of being at least talked about, especially with USC being unbeaten. But I just think it's very hypocritical to talk about Ohio State playing 6 games when if Alabama or Clemson played 6, it would not be a discussion for those schools or those coaches. They would have no problem. If Dabo played 6 games, you think Dabo would be like, well, we shouldn't be in it. We've only played 6. Not fair to the rest of those teams that played 11. We're gonna back out. He wouldn't do that. He'd be like, hey, it's not our fault that we only played 6. We played the cards that we were dealt. We played who we played and we beat them. So we should be in there. That's what he would think if that were happened to him. So I think it's hypocritical.
I don't think I agree with what you're saying, the premise behind what you're saying, but I don't think they're wrong either. And I think this debate could be very easily ended. Actually, I think it would be ended right now if Penn State was worth a crap. If Penn State was what they used to be, Kirk, and was a top 15 program and a really good football team, and Ohio State beat them and beat Indiana, I think this is a moot point. Like, okay, we faced 2 really good teams and we smacked them. Like the Indiana game got close in the end. The Penn State game, I think it was 13 in the end, but it wasn't that close if you watch the score. And Indiana had Penix Jr., by the way, which made them, I think, obviously a much stronger team. They're still a strong team regardless. But, you know, there's not a lot to be impressed with Ohio State's resume. So I think that comes into play. If you watch Ohio State and if you watch their coaching and if you watch their talent, you look at them and you go, man, this team is really, really good. And by the way, if they played Florida's schedule up until this point, I can look at them and say, I feel confident they'd be in a better spot than what Florida's at right now. Can I prove that? No, I can't prove that. But I trust that team and I trust that talent. And I think they're good enough to say that. And I wouldn't feel bad about saying it. It's not going to be apples to apples. It's not going to be oranges to oranges. It's going to be very difficult to do. We don't have the non-conference that we usually have out of schedule that gives us maybe a little bit more information. But I don't think it helps that the Big Ten is not very good compared to the standard in the past. I mean, when you're thinking about Penn State being really, really good and being a perennial, you know, top 15 team the last several years, and when you're thinking about Michigan being a ranked, really good team, when you think about Michigan State being a lot more competitive, Minnesota even a year ago being a lot more competitive. So I think that hurts them. But, you know, what happened on Saturday helped Ohio State, for sure helped Ohio State. And I think now they're in a situation where if they win the Big Ten championship game, they controlled what they could control, then they'll be in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I completely helped Ohio State as they sat there and watched. And another program is Wisconsin, too.
I would say that I don't know if it's as easy as that for Ohio. With what I just said, I don't know if it's as easy as that for Ohio State. I mean, if Florida somehow, they're going to hear all week how bad they are. They're going to be, you know, Marco Wilson and Florida, oh, they got no chance. You know how college football is. It'd be just like college football for Florida to show up inspired, and all of a sudden, and I'm not saying they're going to beat Alabama, but just if they one in a million chance they beat Alabama, what would happen? Florida's not going in after what they did against LSU. They're out. I think Alabama. I mean, I hate to say that. I think Alabama's in.
Yeah,
Alabama's in. I think I think the discussion would be if Notre Dame were to beat Clemson for a second time, that knocks Clemson out. If Clemson beats Notre Dame, you know, I don't know that. I mean, if it were a blowout, is Notre Dame still okay? If Clemson beats Notre Dame with that win, then you start looking at resume with the other teams. I think it'd be hard to imagine Notre Dame with a win at the time. The number one ranked team in the country was Clemson. It'd be hard to imagine Notre Dame being knocked out. I don't know what it would take for Ohio State to be knocked out. You guys think of any scenario at all? If they beat Northwestern, is there
They're in. Because with that Florida loss, regardless.
Yeah, I know Florida would take their spot.
And if you're debating that fifth team, and that is hypothetically A&M, you're looking at A&M's best win. A&M's best win now is against Florida, and then they got boat raced against Alabama. So right. Where you're stacking up the wins. Granted, yeah. Now
they're you know, Florida's still going to be in the top 10, though. Like,
yeah,
like
I get that.
The face of the earth.
But I think that second, if Florida loses to Bama, that second team in the New Year's Six is A&M, right? I mean, that would be A&M over Florida. I think Indiana's another winner as well with the Florida loss to LSU, because I think Indiana has pretty much secured a spot in the New Year's Six as well. If they, you know, it's sitting there, what are they, 6-1 right now? And are they playing Purdue? I mean, is that a go or is that still being discussed?
They play Friday. They play Purdue.
But I'm just saying, is that, as far as COVID, is that still okay? They're looks
it's
like
scheduled right now.
As we're
Friday,
taping this, they're scheduled, right?
So I wish Penix were out there. Like, you know, we've seen that, you know, their backup play a little bit, but nothing compared. You know, Michael Penix was pretty special of a quarterback, and we'll have to wait and see with the Jack Tuttle, who played, you know, he played okay in that one start that he had, but it's a different deal. But I think Indiana will probably get in there in the New Year's Six.
Now, here's a question, because the committee actually made this a conversation by placing Iowa State at 7. What do you do if Iowa State, you know, beats a very good Oklahoma team playing their best football of the season, and they beat them by 10 points? How do you entertain the Iowa State conversation if we have chaos like we've kind of discussed at the top? Is it just too much with the two losses? Because when you look at the playoff history in the previous 6 years, a two-loss team just doesn't – they're not in the conversation.
Well, it's the way they played, even though it was week one. So I think it was 31-14 to Louisiana, who's not a bad team, but it's hard to imagine the amount of chaos that would have to happen, I think, for them to be up there knocking on the door. I mean, it's not impossible, but they made a heck of a jump last week. So the committee clearly likes them all the way up. I think they went from 10 to 8, So they're up in the top eight right now. I just don't know how they would eventually give me the scenario that would put them in. I mean, if Florida beats Alabama, we all think Alabama's still in.
Mm-hmm.
If Ohio State wins in Indy, they're in. If Notre Dame beats Clemson, they're in. Clemson's out. And now you're going to talk about who? A&M?
Yeah. Cincinnati, so it would be – it would probably
Iowa State, Oklahoma?
Complete chaos if Ohio State loses at Northwestern. Then they're out of the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Hey, can I throw something in here real quick?
Yeah.
And again, I don't – if anybody who listens to me, I'm not a homer. I'm not, okay? So I don't care if you – I'm just telling you I'm not. Does anybody look at and is curious that, you know, Missouri – and I'm not saying Georgia deserves to be in the playoff. I'm not, okay? That's not what I'm saying. So clean your ears out. But Georgia, looking at that team now with JT Daniel, it's clearly better. It's clearly different. It would be very interesting to have seen them go back and play Florida. They just drummed, you know, the number 20 – was it 5
25.
Or 20 something, 25 team in the country. So looking now at that team, I'm talking about if chaos happens, if Clemson loses to Notre Dame, you know, Bama wins, A&M still sitting there. If I'm looking at like a Cincinnati, a Georgia, a Iowa State, all those teams, do you think that's because I look at that team, and I'm just saying that team is a lot better now. It's a lot different now. Is that a team that's in the mix too, along with Iowa State? Is that here's a question. Would you put that team over an Iowa State or a Cincinnati if you're talking about going way down the barrel?
You're talking about Georgia on just the way they're playing right now?
Just, yeah, like, because here's
the question. If you put them on a field, if you put them on the field.
Yeah, just curious what you think about them now. Like, because if they played Florida again, there's no doubt I would pick them to beat Florida. I mean, I'm not saying that their defense would shut them out, but obviously they're healthier and JT Daniels playing quarterback. I just think it's another very interesting topic when you look at – when I'm looking at 5 at A&M, Cincinnati, Indiana, Iowa State, those teams, Coastal Carolina, Georgia, like that's the team in there that I would look at and say it would scare me the most out of all them.
Right. No, I mean, if you're just looking at how teams are playing at the end of the year – obviously, Georgia with Daniels in there has looked very, very different. Reality is that it's like, you know, I did the Oklahoma State game, and I went into that game thinking, yeah, this team's a lot better than they looked early in the year. You know, they lost CeeDee Lamb, and they lost, you know, Kennedy Brooks, and Trey Sermon transferred, and they're playing young backs and were just kind of feeling their way early, and they had a new quarterback. I mean, it was basically starting over. And they lost with a big lead against Kansas State. They lost with a lead in the fourth quarter at Ames against Iowa State. And the Texas game changed their season, much like JT Daniels going in for Georgia changed their season. From the Texas game on, Oklahoma's been a different team. And we've talked about, you know, the job that they're doing on defense. And yep. It's real. I mean, if you're going to put a team on the field, now they may lose to Iowa State. But I'm just saying they're better right now than they were the previous 3 years because of the way they're more complete of a team and they've grown up offensively. If they were to go and play against Iowa State and win that game and look really good doing it, I think what you're saying about Georgia, you could say the same thing about Oklahoma.
100% agree.
The only difference that you would have is you would have a conference champion. So yep. I think Oklahoma is a kind of a forgotten team down the rankings, but if they put on a show Saturday, I would not want to put them on a field with somebody because
all right,
you would not.
My question. All here's my question then: if I'm Alabama, who don't I want it for?
Well, it depends on, you know, what's going to happen with Clemson and Notre Dame.
Say Clemson and Notre Dame split, and now they're both 2-3. Who don't I want to play
it? Notre Dame's at 4.
Mm-hmm.
You think Notre Dame's at 4?
Because Ohio State gets the win to get in. Yep.
They're going
to
split Clemson and Notre Dame. They're not going to put Clemson and Notre Dame at 2-3.
Yeah, a week later, like 11 days later, like we're not going to see a rematch.
They end up playing in the national championship. That was one thing, but they're not going to put them in the 2-3 spot. So I think if Clemson, whoever wins, is going to go up to 2. And then they'll put Ohio State at 3,
mm-hmm.
and then the loser of that game will end up going to 4.
Okay, what if Notre Dame beats Clemson?
Well, then you got an opening.
Who wouldn't you want to play? Like Clemson, well, then, Alabama.
There you go. A&M, Cincinnati, Indiana, the winner of the Big 12 championship game. I know what you're saying about Georgia. I don't think Georgia will be in the discussion.
Oh no, they're not in the mix. They're out.
Yeah.
I think Big 12 champ, Cincinnati and A&M are the teams you're talking about.
Yeah, Georgia's out. I think Oklahoma's out too. But I'm just saying, who wouldn't I want to play at that spot is very interesting. If I'm Bama, like, if that scenario happened, there's a couple teams I wouldn't want to see. Georgia would be one of them.
Well, I can tell you on the highlights, on several occasions, whenever we did Georgia highlights on the ABC halftime stuff, I brought it up several times. If this was JT Daniels starting the season and his knee was healthy, this is a team that no one wants to face because they look completely different. And Pollock, you bring up a great point. It's just unfortunate the trip ups earlier in the season, but right now on a neutral field, boy, and hypothetically, guys, you guys have talked about New Year's Six, man, it would be phenomenal to see potentially Georgia versus Oklahoma, right?
Can you make that happen? If Oklahoma beats Iowa State, you know, it could be Iowa State against Georgia, right? But if Oklahoma beat Iowa State, that would be a game. I would set that one aside. I'll dial into that one.
Let's hope we get really good matchups too. You know, here's the thing. A couple other topics here, because we're obviously, this weekend is going to determine a lot when it comes to the playoff. But the Heisman race, guys, feels wide open now. Mac Jones, it's amazing how Alabama's machine's rolling, where he has no touchdown passes. Could have had a pick, but the targeting play pulled that off the board. And they still put up 52 points. Then you have Trask, who struggled in the first half, had three turnovers. And then, you know, righted the ship in the second half. But he has a loss. Devontae Smith, 17 touchdowns. And then you have Ian Book and Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields as part of the conversation on the back end. And how do you guys look at, and Herbie, let's start with you. After what we saw from Trask and Mac and Devontae, how do you look at the Heisman race heading into the weekend?
I think the Alabama players are, I don't know how people are going to split those votes up. Devontae Smith, maybe it's just because I've loved what he's done. And I love that he's become the guy that's had to make plays and he hasn't really let them down. You know, I mean, even a punt return. I mean, under any normal circumstances, how would you not look at him with his numbers and he would be a front runner? Now, David brought this up and it's true. It's the way the world has kind of gone. You know, we live in this world of who's the best quarterback, who's the hot quarterback on the best team in the country. That there's your Heisman winner. You know, and I don't know how many times that's happened in the last 15 years, but it seems like it happens quite a bit. I mean, Devontae Smith, he has, you know, all these Heisman winners, they always have a moment. Devontae Smith has like 10 moments. you know, he and any other year, it would just be, I don't know how you wouldn't select him, but Mac Jones is, you know, if you're looking for a quarterback, I mean, even on a quote unquote off day, he misses five passes. He's 24, 29. I mean, he and Sark are just, they're just working right now, you know, and that offense is terrifying. So I think those are the candidates with Florida losing and Trask. You know how that hurts you when you lose a game, even though he's had a monster year. I think that'll slow down some of his momentum. Yep. And I think Trevor is very deserving, but it just hadn't, you know, with COVID, he hadn't had the same opportunities and the same, obviously, for what's happened at Ohio State.
This is the most open Heisman vote right now that I think we've had in a long time, because I think you could make a case for four people. You know what's going to hurt Mac Jones, by the way, and Devontae Smith? Each other. They're going to hurt each other. Mm-hmm. Because they're on the same team in the same region. And you know how that region works for voting purposes. They're going to split votes, which is going to hurt one candidate, obviously. And I think I don't think Trevor Lawrence is out of it now. I think because of last weekend, Kyle Trask, three turnovers, looking way more human, didn't play his best game. Mac Jones not playing his best game, along with his teammate now just returning punts for touchdowns and showing you how great he is. I think Trevor Lawrence is sitting on the doorstep and can have a huge Notre Dame game. And people go, wait a minute, just because he missed a couple games because of COVID, don't let it fool you. Like, this guy is legit, you know, rushes for 50, 60 yards, throw for 300 and something yards, accounts for five touchdowns. And you just go, all right, man, what I just saw is the best player in college football. So, you know, I think Trevor Lawrence has a really good shot to sneak in the back door this next weekend.
I think that's 100% fair. I mean, it's not like he's had a down year. I mean, and if you've really watched Clemson, they have had a historical year throwing the football. You know, they'll tell you, and if you watch their film, you know, people are loading the box against ETN. I think the reality is, I don't know if they're as good at the offensive line spot as they have been in the past 3 or 4 years. You know, they had the ability, wherever the numbers were, if you didn't load up on the box, then ETN he's going to have 8 yards before he's touched. And they're not doing that this year. So a lot of it is falling on to Trevor Lawrence and Uiagalelei when he has had his opportunities. So I'm with David. I think that's a fair point and legit. I mean, he's got 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's running the ball, like you said, when he has to. If you're just looking at who's the best player in college football going into the year, which a lot of these 900 voters, a lot of it's based on preseason hype. So if he were to go off and put an exclamation point on that big stage, it'll be interesting to see how that sways voters. Because I think a lot of people, if they're smart, they're holding on to the vote until all these games are over on Saturday night.
I hope they are. I hope everybody's holding their vote. I'm praying that everybody's holding their vote, watching everything on Saturday play out, considering the big names that we have and what's at stake. And honestly, I just hope and pray that we have a close game of the ACC championship, because my goodness, it has not been fun for you and Fowler, as well as Maria, filling on the back end of those games, because we thought Carolina and Miami was going to give us a good one, but it was the Mac show. And
by the way, we need to touch on that real quick. I mean, Carolina is as good as they looked. And they, I mean, Mac Brown's second year, what he's doing right now with that team, if they can keep that momentum going into the postseason, that's another team I would put into that category, like David talked about with Georgia and with Oklahoma. We'll see what happens to them. They're sitting there at 8-3. But, man, all the goodwill, all the work that Manny Diaz, the close wins that they had this year, in the middle of this COVID, you know, they beat Virginia in a close game. A week later, remember Friday night, I can't remember where we were. I was trying to stay up. It was a late game. They at Raleigh, they found a way to win that one. I think we were at Tuscaloosa. They beat Virginia Tech by a point in a game. You know, these are all games they lost in the past. So it was like, uh-oh, Manny's building this team up. He's got a team that's starting to learn how to win. And then that, only losing the game, but just not showing up with the Orange Bowl on the line. I almost feel like everything that they accomplished this year gets wiped out with the way they played in a 62-26 game where they just going through the motions. I was shocked by that game.
Woodshed game. And it was one of those games that I think the faithful at Miami, they were slowly back to believing, right? Back to believing. And then, like you said, it's pressing the reset button all over again. The stuff they had deposited out the door.
Tell the fans what 554 yards rushing does to the mindset of a defense and their willingness to want to tackle. It's like you're getting hit over the head with a rubber hose. You know, it's like they're not throwing 80-yard touchdown passes. They're running the ball for 550. By the way, it was like they were averaging 13 yards a carry from the first carry of the game on. It wasn't like
getting punked.
That's late. It was two guys over 200 yards, could have gone over 300. Do whatever you want to do. No one wanted to tackle anybody. But what does that do to the will of a defense when they're not giving up 550 through the air, but 550 on the ground?
There's no worse feeling. Like when you know the ball is being ran and you can't stop it, it's demoralized. Like, it's one thing to do RPOs and confuse you. It's another thing to line up and say, my guy's bigger. I'm bigger. I'm stronger. You can't get me to the ground. Like, it's like you said that you said the hose on the side of the head. It's basically like saying, I'm going to tie two hands behind your back and just beat you with a hose for an hour. Exactly. That's how much fun. That's how much fun that. And listen, there is not a single person on the College Game Day set, and I'm going to throw Kirk in there, everybody, that believe Miami's a great team.
Right.
There's not, okay? Miami sitting at 10. They won 44-41 NC State. Nobody was pounding the drum for Miami to be in the playoff. Nobody was pounding the drum saying Miami deserves it. Miami's has been – they got some fortunate moments, and they haven't played a great schedule, and De'Aaron King has bailed them out. That's – I mean – but they're not back. They're exciting and they're fun to watch. But not only are they not back, that proves that they've got a long way to go.
The most demoralizing stat, and we said it at halftime, was the backfield of Carter and Williams. They had over 180 rushing yards before contact in the first two quarters. That's how dominating, and they were going downhill the whole game. We're going to wrap it up here with news over the weekend, guys, and in a pandemic, this thought process that maybe we're not going to see a lot of coaching moves. We may potentially see a lot of moves. And one of them that kind of has felt like it's been drug out the last two or three years with rumors and speculation was at Auburn with Gus and Gus Malzahn, the buyout over $21 million. But Gus's performance against Saban stood out. They beat the, Bama last year in the Iron Bowl. He's got three wins against Saban. When you look at this job and South Carolina's filled and potential, we'll see what happens with Tennessee down the road. When you look at this job, who would be the guys that you would consider? And we're hearing the names, of course, of Sark and Billy Napier, Hugh Freeze, Mario Cristobal, where would you go, Herbie, for a job like this, considering what's being asked, as well as the fan base having expectations?
Is Jimmy Sexton Gus's agent? I don't know. Whoever his agent is, 21 mil.
Ooh.
I mean,
yes, please. You can fire a lot of people in America. By the way,
I'd be like
this podcast that goes, you can fire me for $21 million, cousin.
He said, "You're paying me how much? Okay, here are the keys. Here are the keys to the building. Who's here? You go. All right, take care. I mean, no headaches. 21.
See, and it is Jimmy Sexton, by the way.
Well done by Jimmy. That was his eighth year as a head coach, and I when I think of Gus Malzahn in Auburn, I'll think he did a good job. I know that they wanted more. I get it. I understand that. But not only competing with Alabama, but I think that what were they, 9-4 a year ago? Anyway, it's a different discussion. I think that living in that same state with the greatest of all time is a tough thing to do. I think you have to look at Hugh Freeze. I think you have to look at what he went through at Ole Miss, how he's owned that, how he's talked about that. You have to come to grips with that. You have to see if you can come to grips with that. And if you can, then you hire him, because he's got an offense. He's got a system. I think he is very different than Gus offensively, even though they get labeled kind of that they're from the same coaching tree or coaching branch as far as offensive style. I think he's different in the pass game. I think he's got a way about him. He competes. He's done very well against Nick Saban in recruiting and competing against him. I don't know, man. That's who I would look at. And I know those other guys you brought up are really good. I just think under these circumstances, Auburn has to decide if they can deal with what Hugh has publicly talked about his past. And he's a man that's like all of us, flawed, and he's talked about that, and he's moved on in life. And if they can move on with him, then that's the direction I would go personally.
I think I always look at these in a different lens than probably everybody else, but I always look at the hires and I go, if I was playing against them year after year, who wouldn't I want there? And there's no way in hell I would want Hugh Freeze there. I wouldn't want him there. I mean, if you're talking about a guy that not only, like Kirk said, has beaten Bama, the offense is way different than Gus. Way different. Hugh Freeze has his hand on it, and Hugh Freeze can take advantage of the passing game. Hugh Freeze puts you in conflict, but not like here's the thing I'll say about Gus. I think Gus did a good job. I think Gus's offenses were really poor the last 3 or 4 years. Really poor. And I don't think they maximized what they had. I don't think they evolved in passing concepts. I think they could have been a lot better on that side of the football. Defensively, you know, 2 years ago and or last year and 2 years ago, I mean, you're talking about lights out. I mean, just hammering people defensively. And this year took a step back because you lose so many studs to the NFL. But just Hugh Freeze coming into that. Hugh Freeze has consistently done more with less. You're not going to have as much as Alabama. You're going to play them every year. You're not going to have as much as Georgia. You play them every year. But I need a guy that's exciting. And again, Kirk, we talked about this the other day on game day, just real quick. When I'm hiring a coach, me, if I'm making the decision and I'm an AD, I want one side of the football taken care of. I want you to be able to master one side of the football. Hugh Freeze has one side of the football mastered. He has the offensive side. It should always be good. Now he can hire a good defensive coordinator, get a good defensive staff. You know, like
well, who wouldn't be that? Who wouldn't be a guy that's a head coach like Clark Lee at Notre Dame? He'd be a candidate that he would master the defensive side. I think anybody who's becoming a head coach.
Well, look at Ed Orgeron. That's an outlier. I'm just saying, like, I don't like Jimbo Fisher. I want to be, you know, he's the expert on offense. I know I got good offenses. Like that's what it needs to be taken care of. It's not the same when it comes to everywhere else. Like, I don't think, you know, like Sark. Sark's an offensive, you know, master. You think you'd have the offense master. Do you think Sark could come in right coach, now?
Name a head coach besides Coach O who doesn't have an expertise on a certain side of the ball.
Well, Les Miles is another one that's not doing well. Again, was at LSU. You know, I think that's the part that you look at that confuses. But let's see. Now you're gonna make me think.
Yeah. See, I know what you're saying, but I think the modern era, these guys to become a head coach candidate, unless they're just a great recruiter. You know, Coach O, he's a great fit. And a great recruiter needs to surround himself with great coordinators. I think that's potentially, or in my opinion, that's an outlier. I think most of these guys are like Chip Kelly. He's an offensive guy. You know what I mean? Like Dan Mullen's an offensive guy. Ryan Day is an offensive guy. Tom Herman, you know, even though he's struggling.
Dabo's not.
He has an offensive background. Well, Dabo's
not an X&O guy.
I think he's a little bit further ahead than you think. I mean, think about the situation where he inherited. He was wide receiver coach. I mean, like Shane Beamer. Shane Beamer is a kind of another one that's a little bit of an outlier, right? So there, you can handpick a few here and there, but I think most of these guys that become to a certain level of let's go hire him, it's because what he's doing as a coordinator somewhere in most cases.
That's fair. I mean, when you look at the innovative stuff too, I come back to one thing, Nick giving the credit to what Hugh Freeze brought, right, to the SEC and adapting and then changing his offense. And now you're seeing a team that's scoring over 50 points per game 5 times this season in a full SEC schedule. And that's what Hugh Freeze brings. He brings innovation. He brings the ability to, I understand how to adapt. And the question will be how this will be playing out in the SEC, considering what happened at Ole Miss and the comfort level that Greg Sankey has with this moving forward. I think that there are many layers and levels to this. It's just a fascinating timing aspect of Auburn doing this and then the unknown down the road with Tennessee. And could we be seeing two programs trying to compete to get to the finish line on the phone call with Hugh Freeze down the road? No one knows that. It's pure speculation. It's just what we do here as we try to talk about the coaching carousel, which has been a surprise so far in a pandemic. Fellas, let's just hope Saturdays are good. I anticipate we're going to have fantastic matchups. Let's just hope we've got some close games, and then we could sort everything out on Sunday's selection show with you guys joining Reese Davis. Enjoy the rest of the week and Saturday on game day.
Sounds good.
Peace.
That'll do it for this college football podcast here on a Monday. Big thanks to Kirk Herbstreit and David Pollack. A variety of good topics. I mean, honestly, this kind of felt like a week where we would deal with a lot of the same stuff, recycled conversations, but a lot of developments on Saturday on the field as well as on Sunday. And I imagine even more on Tuesday night leading into the playoff conversation. So, hey, I just anticipate that Saturday is going to be a heck of a lot of fun. And the finish line and the light at the end of the tunnel is there. And let's just hope everyone's healthy and safe. And big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, as always, making sure that we are sound and ready on Mondays and Wednesdays for you on the podcast. So thank you for doing a great job producing each and every week here for you and the listeners. If you want more college football, I just ask everybody, please stay safe, social distance, wear a mask during the holiday season. We want you guys all to be healthy moving forward, heading into 2021. Take care.